Coming up on a special bonus feature episode of That Was a Show, Bryn and Aaron examine the attempted spinoff of The Nanny called The Chatterbox, which never made it past a failed backdoor pilot. This show could be described as The Nanny, without Fran Drescher, meets Dirty Dancing, without Hart, meets Cheers, without jokes, and set in a hair salon in Deep Queens. We grew up during peak sitcom, Seinfeld, Friends, The Fresh Prince, but those shows were diamonds in the rough. This podcast is not about those diamonds. It's about the rough. Some sitcoms were briefly popular in their time. Some were canceled almost immediately. You probably won't recognize most of these, and you'll ask, that was a show?
That was a show?
The podcast about failed or forgotten sitcoms from the 80s and 90s, starring
Bryn Burney,
Aaron Yeager,
and Andrew Helmer as Barry.
A Radio Gizmo production.
Hello and welcome to a special bonus episode of That Was a Show.
Hey, everybody. Is this a bonus episode or is it a mini episode or is it a little bit of both?
You know what? It's a mini episode, but I'm going based on the naming scheme when you post a podcast episode, deriving from the way that Apple does it, where it's either a full episode or a bonus episode. Those are the ways that we tag it. But it's like a mini episode. Actually, on that note, I'm realizing like the last bonus episode that we did was, of course, revisiting the show It's Your Move.
Yeah.
With teenage Jason Bateman.
Yeah.
A fun look back at one of our earlier episodes.
Yeah.
And then we've also done DVD bonus features style mini episodes that have extra stuff cut from longer episodes,
yeah,
but stuff that we still think would be pretty fun.
From the cutting room floor.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And like deleted scenes from a show. And so, you know, what would be fun is actually for any fans out there listening to this podcast, feel free to leave us a voice message on anchor.fm/thatwasashow and let us know if you have any fun ideas for a mini episode or bonus episode that you'd like us to do, like something that you want us to revisit, if it's like a show that we've covered in an earlier episode, or just a completely different riff on themes relating to 80s and 90s sitcoms. We're like open to any fun ideas you might have for one of these non-canonical That Was a Show episodes. But this time around, we're going to be talking about...
Yeah, so I don't even know what to call this. I guess it is a backdoor pilot, and it's very much inspired by... I don't know, it's been in my head for a very long time to try to chat about this. And kind of inspired from our Gloria episode because we watched two versions of the pilot of that sitcom, which was a spinoff, and one of them was an actual backdoor pilot. So I'm like, oh, I love a good backdoor pilot. It's such a weird phenomenon. And this particular one has been haunting me for years. So it's basically an attempt at a spinoff of the iconic sitcom The Nanny. But it didn't really go anywhere, and it now just sort of lives in the world of The Nanny as a random backdoor pilot attempt of an episode.
In season two.
So it's called The Chatterbox, and we'll get into what it's about. Also, we should mention that you're, of course, not hearing a third voice here. Right now, you've just got Mom and Dad. You've just got Bryn and Aaron. Our beloved Barry is taking a little break for this week. So we thought we'd do one of our little snappy, kind of loosey-goosey bonuses that, kind of is off the cuff.
So why don't you introduce us to what The Chatterbox is about?
All right. So... in season two, they tried to spin off The Nanny, and now we have no idea what this sitcom would have been called. Maybe it would have been called The Chatterbox, but basically it's going to Queens, where Fran is from, Fran Fine from The Nanny, and her family is from Queens, Flushing, Queens. And it's this like salon that the women from the Fine family go to. And it's run by this person, Mr. Anthony. He's this like kind of, I don't know if he's like a Lothario or what he's supposed to be. But he's this like handsome, charismatic hairdresser who is also a womanizer. And he's a single dad and he runs this salon in Queens. So basically the story was going to be very similar to The Nanny in that he hires an unlikely woman to work for him, which in this case is this young aspiring actress, Mary Ruth. And basically there's sparks between them and they don't get along. And it's will they or won't they? Very, very similar to Fran and Mr. Sheffield.
So, well done.
So basically, the theory that I saw a lot online is that it didn't go anywhere because it was very similar to the premise of The Nanny. The one thing I will say is this is very much like a working class tale, which I appreciated more. But other than that, the humor is very similar to The Nanny. It has like a very similar vibe. And I don't know if the implication was that occasionally you'd have characters from The Nanny popping into the salon or what, like Fran's mother, Sylvia, and her grandma, Yetta. I don't know if they were going to be popping in or what the deal was. But anyway, it just kind of lived there. It kind of like lived there in the Nanny story world. And I remember the reason why I wanted to do this so bad is I remember watching The Nanny when it was on as a kid, but I also remember watching tons of reruns. And I can't remember if I can't place the memory correctly. This might be a little bit of a you and a John, the John Larroquette show situation, but I can't quite place the exact timing of when I first watched this random episode, whether it was in syndication or if it was when it was like airing on CBS, whenever that was. But I remember seeing this episode and being a little kid and not understanding why we were straying so far away from the story world and who these other characters were and why they were focusing them on so much. Like basically little Bryn didn't quite know what a backdoor pilot was. I thought about it for years, much longer than I like to, you know, admit, because it's kind of sad. It's, you know, I obsessed over this weird detour in the Nanny story world almost as much as I obsessed over what happened to the middle child on Family Matters, Judy Winslow. Everybody knows this. She, you know, went up the stairs one day and then didn't come back down. But I really, really wanted to do this. And it's pretty wild because there's some other content creators out there, some YouTubers and podcasters that kind of beat us to this. So I just want to like give them a shout out first of all, and kind of inspired us to dive in. So the Plus Two Comedy team that has a few podcasts, and one of them is called Stay Doomed. And they were talking about this back in 2019. So, you know, they were ahead of us. And apparently they cover a lot of similar stuff, a lot of short-lived TV. So check them out. You can find them on Twitter at @StayDoomed or check them out on Facebook. And they've got, you know, they've got all their stuff on YouTube. There's also a great YouTube video that summarized this. I think you watched it too, Aaron. It was by Atomic. What is it here? Atomic Abe. And he does like a lot of pop culture videos as well. So I don't know. It's interesting that I wasn't the only one who had this in my brain for so long. And one of the like biggest compliments I think that we get from people when folks reach out to us, whether it's like friends or random listeners, they'll often say you like unlocked a memory that I like forgot about. And like that is the goal, or one of the many goals of this show, is to like unlock those like weird like things, those like little pop culture moments that are completely low stakes and meaningless, but they've just like been living in your brain rent free for like decades.
So, I don't know if anyone's living anywhere rent free now.
Oh yeah, I mean, especially not where we are here in Toronto, Ontario.
Prices are going up.
But at least these like weird, random, obscure things from like the 90s can just like live in your brain.
In the 80s and 90s New York City rent controlled apartment part of your brain.
Yeah, exactly.
Where the rent is still there, but it's like very low.
Yeah.
Small sidebar. So as a kid, I definitely caught the odd episode of The Nanny.
Yeah, and everyone did, I think.
I always found Fran Drescher really entertaining and compelling. Yeah. And little shout out to my friend Adam. You'll know which Adam I'm talking about if you're listening to this, who was always a fan of The Nanny when we were kids.
Yeah, he's a big fan of The Nanny. He still like posts like Fran Fine
but
like
I wasn't,
stuff online.
Like, I wasn't hugely into it at the time. I think I just didn't find the Mr. Sheffield aspect of it and the like will they or won't they aspect of it as compelling like at that age. Like, I found her very entertaining, but I didn't find it as easy to get into the other aspects of the show. But in your opinion, should I revisit and watch The Nanny?
I mean, yeah, and I'll watch it with you. I've caught the odd episodes here and there. It's definitely worth it for her fashions. Like, some of those outfits, man, like, she really, she was really serving some looks, like, really intense, like, kind of, I don't know, like, she was obviously not going for this, but it almost looked like some of it was verging on Club Kids from the 90s. Like, it was, like, bright colors, because the whole thing is she's the flashy girl from Flushing, you know?
Yeah.
And, I mean, she was, like, iconic, and I think a lot of people didn't appreciate her because she has, like, a nasal register when she speaks, and she's, like, you know... But she, like, owns it. Like, she owns how annoying she is. Like, that's, like, part of her thing is that she's, like, you know, she's, like, endearingly annoying. And not afraid to be over the top and, like, flamboyant with how she dresses.
Yeah. Now, the fact that we're still talking about Fran is a good point to connect back to the show that we're supposed to be talking about. Because this is one of, in my opinion, the chief problems, having watched it now, this backdoor pilot spinoff for the Chatterbox, one of the chief problems I would identify is that it's a spinoff of this story world, but the element that's not there is Fran Drescher. And it's kind of like, of all of the things in the Nanny story world that would say, hey, I want to get more of this on TV.
Yeah.
It's her. So the idea of saying, okay, this is going to be set in an environment that is inspired by her character, that connects with her character, but she ain't going to be there. Pass.
Yeah, I have to say, like, I don't know. I mean, I have to say I really did like Tracy Nelson, who is the lead character.
Oh, she's good.
Mary Ruth. Like,
but
she's...
Just build a new story around her.
I know. I mean, anyway, it's like, okay, so basically, I guess we should explain what the hell happened.
Yeah.
So they link it to the Nanny world because basically Maxwell Sheffield is having auditions for some new ambitious theater production that he's putting on because, of course, if you're familiar with the Nanny, he's like a big time Broadway theater producer. So he's putting together a new show and he decides to have auditions at his home, which I find really weird. But anyway, like, there's all these like women that are like kind of milling about at the house. And suddenly this like very kind of frantic young woman runs in and she's like, you know, running behind or no, she kept a cab waiting or something. It's like a whole thing. And so she and Fran kind of connect in the living room and they're kind of chatting and whatever and commiserating, and she shares with Fran that she just got dumped by her boyfriend, and so Fran decides to do like a mitzvah for her and tries to like, you know, help her, you know, soup up her resume a little bit to look more impressive.
Yeah, they bond over the fact that like
they were both dumped in an embarrassing way,
and Fran can tell that she's kind of like scrappy and not super experienced as an actor.
Yeah.
And like all of the other people there are all like these women who are clearly like probably more experienced and they all seem to be more like models and...
Well, yeah, the implication is that everyone has big boobs, but yeah. She doesn't have big boobs, yeah. So that's why she doesn't get the part.
So,
and that comes back later, so there's like a big boob obsession.
A lot of boob stuff in this,
yeah,
in this like, plot, it's, in this it's big, episode
it's
in
boob
general.
Heavy.
Very-
yeah.
Yeah. But... Yeah, in any case, they bond there and Fran tries to help her get the part, which doesn't work.
Yeah, because apparently she has a really bad audition and like they don't show it, but it's implied that her audition was no good and there's no way in hell she was going to get it. So Fran then again helps her because she remembers that Mr. Anthony is hiring. Is it Anthony or Antony?
I think it's Anthony.
Yeah, I think they call him Antony when they're trying to be pretentious.
He's basically like a, like, I like the way you put it when we were watching it, like the PG version of a Chippendale character.
Yeah.
Just like packed into his jeans.
Yeah.
Just
like,
just shoveled in there.
Yeah.
In the tightest pants imaginable. Just constantly swinging his hips around and thrusting his pelvis.
Anyway, Aaron, you didn't let me finish the thought. So basically what I'm trying to explain is Fran tips off Mary Ruth that Mr. Anthony needs a shampoo girl, which is kind of a random thing as well. And something that I noticed in other sitcoms of the era where any person could just walk into a salon and get a job in these, circumstances. And I know that that is a thing in certain fancy salons. They'll have like a receptionist or something who's not a trained hairdresser. They'll have like people that serve those functions. But it feels like in 90s sitcoms, they always had like a shampoo girl that was not, shouldn't have been touching people's heads. And she'd be sweeping the floor or she would be, you know, giving shampoos. And
this is also just our elder millennial angst of the fact that for our generation, you can't get a job unless you're super qualified
for it.
You can't just walk in and be like, hey, can I have this job?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess.
So anyway, so after a bunch of shtick, like when they show up at the salon, he ends up hiring her and it is, you know, it isn't that believable, but whatever, we go with it. And we meet other people that work in the shop who are all pretty eccentric. So we meet the nail tech the manicurist, Kim. And we meet, what's the other guy's name here? Oh, and then we meet the other stylist, Claude, who's played by Edward Hibbert, who some people might remember from Frasier. He plays the like food critic.
Gil Chesterton,
I think.
Very similar character, actually.
And
just like dressed different clothing, but like very similar.
So Lauren Tom plays Kim. And this is our, I guess, the one one degree of Friends connection, because she, many of you will remember as Julie, Ross's girlfriend, that causes the whole, you know, major conflict when Rachel finally finds out that Ross is in love with her and then she tries to pursue him. He comes back from China dating Julie. So, yeah. So you remember her from that. And she's super talented, super prolific.
She's also that voice on Futurama.
Yes,
I can't remember the character's name.
Yeah,
but
well, we got IMDb here. We can pull it up. We can find out all this information. Yeah.
Just hack into the mainframe there and
exactly.
Tell me.
Amy Wong.
Amy.
Yeah, Amy. Yeah. So, which is a very... Actually, she like did some voices on Rick and Morty, too, it looks like. And all kinds of stuff. She's been in everything. She's like awesome.
She's very good.
Yeah. So, so like it's kind of like, you know, and I am kind of sad that this show didn't go anywhere because once again, it literally only had this episode. Like, this is not a normal Twas show where there's like at least a few episodes.
Yeah.
Like this didn't even have, like it didn't get ordered to do anything.
And for good reason,
I think. But also I loved the setting. I love the hair salon setting.
I was going to say, the setting is good. The cast is good. It's a very solid cast.
Yeah.
It's just, they should have made some different choices in the characters and the dynamics between them. What's interesting is like, okay, obviously there's the parallel with the nanny, and that is cited as one of the possible reasons why it didn't get picked up, which was that it was too similar. It's kind of like you have the young woman who takes this job, and she's working for this guy who's a single father, and there's a will they or won't they between them.
Yeah.
Just like Fran's dynamic with Mr. Sheffield.
Yeah.
But without Fran Drescher. So it's kind of like, okay, so it's the same premise, but without the person that got you into that story world in the first place.
Yeah.
But I also found a similarity between this and Cheers, actually. So what I found compelling about the salon as a setting, even though I haven't personally spent a lot of time in salons, at least not one that has this kind of social environment, is that much like the bar in Cheers, it's the kind of place that can be both workplace comedy and hangout spot.
Yeah.
Because it serves both purposes in the community. And so it's got that parallel. But also I found that, like, what's her name? The character who's the one who, the actress who takes the job there washing hair?
Tracy Nelson.
Tracy. That's the character?
No, well, that's the actor.
Yeah, but what's the character?
The character's name is Mary Ruth.
Okay, Mary Ruth. So I found Mary Ruth and Mr. Anthony to kind of be like a Sam and Diane thing. But
yeah,
like
a little bit.
Like she, instead of being like the bookish intellectual type, she's like the starving actor type.
Yeah.
And instead of being the charismatic retired former baseball player, Mr. Anthony's kind of a sleazeball.
Mm-hmm.
He's like the low rent version of Sam. But
yeah, but Sam was kind of a sleazeball too. Wasn't he a womanizer too?
He was a womanizer, but not flirting with 15-year-olds.
Yeah, that is, I guess we should like bring that up.
Not thrusting his pelvis into women's faces.
It's a little odd. Like his whole persona is basically like he's apparently a good hairdresser, but he's also really gross and flirty with all the women and girls that come in, because the reason, you know, the nanny characters are brought into it is because Fran is taking Maggie Sheffield to get her hair done there because she's going to the Sweet 16 party, which is another thing that I find like a crazy trope from 90s sitcoms is a lot of Sweet 16 parties. I feel like it's more of a thing in the States. But like, I feel like I saw so many stupid Sweet 16 party storylines, you know, in these sitcoms growing up. And I'm like, is that a thing? Like, is it? Like, I don't know. American listeners, you can chime in and hit us up and tell us about Sweet 16 parties, I guess. But basically, Maggie really wants to look good and, like, you know, just make a splash at this other girl's Sweet 16 party. So Fran brings her there. And the first thing that Mr. Anthony does is start like hitting on her, and it's gross.
He's an interesting choice for a protagonist or like major lead in a in what's supposed to theoretically be like a major ongoing lead in a family comedy. And he's the kind of guy who would have to be legally mandated to notify people door to door when he moves into a new neighborhood.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean,
what is going on there? I mean,
I feel like it's probably innocent. like he would never actually like pursue a like, you know, but like it's inappropriate that he's flirting with her. But I think that's as far as it would go. And his whole thing is like, I think he is a beauty shop owner because he loves the attention from women.
Yeah.
Because he knows he's kind of hot and he can, like, you know, just flirt with everybody. And that's what he, you know, it just boosts his ego.
Yeah. And like, I get that. And also, it really feels like he's a dirty dancing type of thing. Yeah. You know,
he's always singing.
Always singing and dancing and twirling around. And
we should mention he is a Cassidy. From the very famous Cassidy family, Patrick Cassidy plays this part. So he was like, you know, his mom is like Shirley Jones. Like, it's like a very like famous family of like performers. Yeah.
And the actor's doing a good job of portraying what I just think is a crazy choice for a character.
Yeah.
But so this isn't really a commentary on the actor per se.
He's kind of a hunky 90s deadbeat, but he's not a deadbeat because he owns a business.
No, he owns a thriving business.
He owns a thriving business, but his his, let's just say his behavior in his personal life is a bit of a deadbeat because he's, you know.
But that's why
he's, I don't know. It's weird. He's kind of an outlier.
He's the hunky deadbeat. Well, he's the hunky deadbeat trope in the same way that Sam is.
Right.
Except, again, you know, icky.
Yeah.
But like, that is a version of the hunky deadbeat who's not really a deadbeat because Sam owns a bar and he's like a former Major League Baseball player.
Yeah.
But I guess we need a variant of that trope. We need to come up with a name for that. Send us a voice message with your ideas. This is one of our favorite all-time sitcom tropes, but I think we're going to need like a type B variant of the hunky deadbeat for the one who's like relatively successful financially.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is.
But he doesn't know how to control his emotions. So that's, you know, and maybe it's unfair to call someone who can't control their emotions a deadbeat because a lot of us struggle with our emotions. But like, you know, when you're a man and you're a father, if you can't control your emotions, then that it veers a little bit into deadbeat territory, I guess.
I guess.
Because his poor son is like getting bullied and like he misses his mom who walked out on him and they seem to have a cute relationship. Like they start singing Tom Jones, which again is another weird 90s trope, like referencing Tom Jones. Like that was like big in the 90s. You got like Carlton.
Yeah.
From Fresh Prince, who sang Tom Jones all the time. And
that's
like,
true.
It's weird. But anyway, so they, you know, they have a cute relationship, but he will not like, you know, address his feelings about his wife that walked out on them. And like his son is like obviously hurting, but he's not doing enough to support him. And Mary Ruth sort of is like trying to. She's really like overstepping a boundary there. Someone who doesn't even know them, like, is trying to, like, you know, I don't know, insert herself in this like family, this serious family matter. But yeah, I don't know. It like it's a weird little show. It was like a good attempt at doing something.
Yeah, I think it's a perfectly good attempt.
Yeah.
Good cast. I see the value in using that as the setting.
Yeah. I want to see more sitcoms set in beauty salons.
I agree with you that having a bit more of a working class spin on a workplace sitcom setting, I'm on board for that. Flushing, Queens, on board for that. I think that for me, the Mr. Anthony character, and not just because of like the way that he's like hypersexualized, but like just in general, I don't find him to be that compelling of a character. I'm more interested in the other people in that environment.
Yeah.
And I just feel like he's going to be such a staple and such a dominant force for whatever plots they would have put in that world.
Yeah.
That I'm just like, I would probably find that to just drag. His son was kind of a fun character.
Yeah.
I guess, but like, you know, the moment where the two of them start singing together.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, that's kind of a touching thing, the idea that this father and son like bond in that way. Mm-hmm. That they're like doing this duet sort of thing where they suddenly spontaneously break into song together.
Yeah.
I have to note also that the child actor who played his son, pretty solid triple threat there.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think he sung better than the dad.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that was like a lot of those kids in those 90s sitcoms.
Yeah.
They were all these superstar singer, dancer, actor.
Yeah, I thought he was going to do backflips at one point.
Yeah, like bona fide like child star.
Yeah.
Where you're kind of concerned about what their home life is like. Like what kind of stage parent did they have?
Right.
You know, like, ugh. But yeah. Anyway,
just checking through my notes here to see if there's anything else I was gonna, any leftovers to mention. Of course, I should note that the actress who plays the lead in this
Mary
this story,
Ruth, yeah.
Yeah, is the woman that George dates who looks like Jerry on Seinfeld.
Seinfeld, yeah.
So, you know, that's great.
That's a very wild episode of Seinfeld. If anyone needs to revisit that episode,
yes,
it's you know, George goes through quite a
crisis of self-identity or whatever. Yeah, I don't know. I guess like, oh, here's a fun note I wrote down, that it is the logical spinoff of The Nanny to have something hair-based, because both right. Fran and her mother have the biggest hair
I've ever seen
in my entire life.
And I mean, that is something that I always appreciated about The Nanny, like the jokes about how much makeup Fran wore and how big her hair was, and like those jokes were constant, and it was never like, you know, we were laughing with her because she like loved that she was like a high maintenance.
Yeah.
You know, like that was just like her.
Exactly.
Like,
and the other thing is, this show, you know, when you take a step back and you look at the cast of characters.
Yeah.
In some ways, it's a collection of cliches.
Yeah.
And stereotypes. But I will say that given the chops of the people they cast.
Yeah.
You know, I do feel like they could have grown into three-dimensional characters.
Yeah.
Given enough runway to do so and with the right writing. But yeah, I mean, for me, I'm like, whatever, I'd kind of like to see a different version of some of these ideas, just done a little differently.
Oh, you know what's wild? Okay, we failed to mention that Tracy Nelson was also on A League of Their Own, which we covered.
Oh.
She was like the lead of that. She was Evelyn Gardner.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So anyway, it's just such a funny little blip in the world of The Nanny that existed, and it just kind of like lives in the catalog of episodes. So it's just kind of there as a late season episode of season two, much like there are any fans of The Office out there, like the farm episode of The Office, where clearly they tried to do a backdoor pilot with Dwight inheriting his aunt's farm and having to work with his siblings. You guys know if you're Office fans.
If you know, you know.
If you, the girls that know, know. But yeah, like it's very funny when they do that and then they just like let it live like in the catalog of episodes. Because if you watch it out of context, it can be very confusing. And, you know, as evidenced by, you know, how confused I was as a, like an 11-year-old when I watched it.
I will say, though, that this show did have a continuing tie-in subplot that connected it back to The Nanny story world.
It did. They did. They managed to do that. But I at the time, again, remember feeling very like curious about like, who are these people and why do I care about them and why am I here for this long? And like, I vividly remember the scene where the Kim character is talking to Mary Ruth about her nails, because she has very intricately painted nails with like, where she basically does like photorealistic paintings like on her nails.
Yeah.
And she's explaining that, like, you know, she did like the son there, Mr. Anthony's son's class picture on her nails. And like, she's just like very, you know, I just remembered that scene and it was like hanging out in my brain for like years. And so I was thrilled when I like randomly stumbled upon like a couple of these like videos. I think it might have been the Atomic Abe video that I saw first. I was like, wait, someone else cared about this random like non sequitur in the Nanny universe? Like, someone else cared? So it's like, I don't know. It's just like a fun way to remind ourselves that, you know, these weird pop culture things that just kind of stick in your mind are sticking in other people's minds. It's happening.
Yeah, it's fun. But yeah, I was going to say, it's kind of like, I was going to say, what makes it a little different from The Farm is that whereas The Farm really feels like a complete departure from The Office for that one episode, this one had enough tie back to that B story with Fran and with Mr. Sheffield and his daughter and all of that.
Yeah.
That there's that element of plausible deniability in a sense, where because it didn't get turned into a show, they can just say, oh, it's kind of an experimental episode of The Nanny. Like, there's enough constant tie-in. Like, for us, we can tell because there's so much focus on these other new characters in this salon that it's clearly not a normal episode.
Yeah.
But there's that little bit of a tie-in that kind of creates that, you know, that connection to the ongoing world of the nanny that not all backdoor pilots have. Some of them are just complete detours.
Although I do wonder if that was a re-edit. Like, I do wonder, because I feel like the very, and again, this could be my faulty memory. This could be me having a Aaron with John Larroquette situation where I'm misremembering it. But I seem to recall when I first watched it, it was like the other characters were completely gone halfway through. Like, the nanny characters were gone completely halfway through. And maybe this was edited together so it looked sort of like a normal episode.
Could be.
I don't know. Ah, maybe we'll never know.
Maybe we won't.
But I'm glad that I got to revisit this and like just feel a little bit of closure on this situation. And maybe it'll inspire a rewatch in our household of the nanny. Because you really did like the Hanukkah episode that they did.
I did.
That we discussed in our last holiday. Was it our very first holiday episode that we did? I think it was.
Maybe it was. Anyway, I did like that. And yeah, I will say that Fran Drescher and the nanny character definitely like of the great Jewish icons of sitcom history and one of the most authentic. Yeah. So I do admire her and what she's done. So, yeah. Might have to rewatch some of those episodes. Also, I was going to say, like, what season of The Office did they push the farm into?
I think it was near the end. I think it was the final season.
Right.
So which that made more sense.
Which makes sense because it's at the point when you know you're coming to the end of a successful show that you're like, can we, you know, buy ourselves some more time with one of these characters?
Yeah.
Whereas with this, to try to bounce off into a second show set in the same story world in season two, that is a bold move.
Yeah, it was a very bold move. Maybe they were trying to, because it is created by like same writers and creators of The Nanny. So Prudence Frazier and of course Fran's ex-husband, Peter Mark Jacobson. So maybe they were trying to set up a little like empire. Maybe they were trying to like set up a whole dynasty of like having multiple shows on at once.
Multiple Queens-based sitcoms.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe that's what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Well, good for them.
Good for them for shooting their shot.
All right. Well, I guess that's it for our analysis of
the Chatterbox.
Yep. And we'll be back again soon with a standard format episode.
Standard issue.
Standard issue episode of That Was a Show with Barry.
Yeah. And maybe, you know, Mr. Producer will hear about his crazy book tour or.
Yeah, we do have to catch up with him and see how he's doing.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for hanging out with us.
Thanks for listening. And cut to credits. That Was a Show is created and hosted by Bryn Burney, Andrew Barry Helmer, and myself, Aaron Yeager. It's a production of Radio Gizmo in Toronto, Canada. Subscribe, rate, review, and share. Follow us on Instagram and tell your friends about it. That Was a Show.
Radio Gizmo.